U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome to the Potomac Watch podcast. And for Paul Chigaud, I'm James Freeman, and very fortunate today to have with us the resident rock star at the Wall Street Journal, the author of the Potomac Watch column, and this week a New York Times bestseller, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. Kimberly Strassel, how are you?
I am good. Thank you for that, James.
Well, I'm reading all these rave reviews on the Amazon page where, of course, this is the number one book on the Amazon politics list. And Publishers Weekly calls Resistance at All Costs a bracing challenge to mainstream political narratives. It is certainly that. And that's what we're going to try to do on this podcast.
We will.
Now that I've set the bar high, we have to deliver.
Yes. Okay. So I'm ready.
So the first exciting topic is GDP. And it turns out that the U.S. economy is maybe a little less mediocre than most economists expected, but still not great. 1.9% growth, we learned today, in the third quarter of this year. So, Kim, this is kind of a strange economy right now. We have very employed, generally happy consumers. And we have companies who are not all that eager to invest right now.
Yep, that about sums it up. So 1.9%, which is slightly down from the second quarter, which was 2.0. And the real rock stars, at least of the economy, seem to be consumers, as you mentioned, and the housing sector. So one of the things that really that gave a big boost to even this somewhat lackluster number was the housing sector. Residential investment was up 5.1%. That was after six straight quarters of declines. It's probably a reflection of short-term interest rates being down, people capitalizing on that to do improvements to their home or to do construction. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, consumers, they spent a 2.9% annual rate. That's down from the second quarter, 4.6. But it nonetheless is a reflection that we are still seeing record low unemployment rates and wages and income are growing. And there's pretty strong consumer sentiment out there. And so, you know, this is all combined to keep us where we are. The worry, as you said, is corporate investment, which is down.
Yeah, and that's two quarters in a row. It's still, as you said, it's a great time to be looking for a job. We're going to get the latest employment report on Friday. We'll get the NFIB report on small business tomorrow. But all signs are that people are highly employed. It's a very tight labor market. But that business investment number down for the second quarter in a row, and you try and figure out why would companies not be eager to invest in the United States. And we talk about the tax cut of 2017, which made the U.S. so competitive, the cuts in regulation, which sparked a real boom in capital expenditures, businesses wanting to invest in the U.S. And now, why is it slowing down? I think you have to say the Trump trade disputes. I don't really see any other explanation.
No, absolutely. It's political uncertainty. And the economists that were asked about these numbers and business managers asked about their decision making, most of them said political uncertainty and that they're in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment. They want to see where things go with the trade tariffs. Also, I think they're a bit concerned when they look out at the political environment that weighs on things too. Look, we're in the middle in Washington of an impeachment inquiry.
Right.
And then, you know, every month we're seeing Democratic candidates up on the stage talking about their proposals to dramatically restructure the entire U.S. economy.
Yeah.
And I would wager that if I were a big corporate CEO, I'd be sitting back and waiting to see where all that goes too.
And I guess one possible bright spot on that score You mentioned the impeachment inquiry, political uncertainty, but we are seeing some indication that at least one of the trade disputes may be resolved, in part because of all of this partisan fighting in Washington. And that is, there is a theory, and I'd be curious your thought on this. There is a theory that House Democrats in swing districts will want next year to show voters that they've been doing something with their time other than tormenting President Trump. And so they are very eager to be able to vote and vote yes on the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. This is the NAFTA replacement, which makes some changes, some good, some bad, probably going to pay a little more for cars. Maybe some better news in terms of better intellectual property protection on medical inventions. But this idea that Democrats may want to pass this, even if it gives President Trump a victory, in order to show they've been busy on something important this year. What do you make of that, Kim?
Well, the hopeful take on that idea is that this is, the USMCA is one of the few areas in which there does seem to be a bipartisan majority in favor of passage. And in addition, as you said, Democrats have really got nothing to show for, you know, 9 months now, 10 months now of running the House, mm-hmm. other than this cannon of subpoenas that they keep shooting at the White House. And I think a lot of Americans are sick of it. And Nancy Pelosi is aware of this. It's why she held off as long as she did the impeachment flood, because she wanted to focus on some actual accomplishments and show that they could govern. I think the more negative take on that idea is that, you know, Democrats are in a mad rush to try to wrap up this impeachment proceeding, but they're stuck in a bit of a hard place, and that if they want to get a hold of some of the witnesses and look as though they're at least attempting to do this in a fulsome manner, it's going to take a while to get through all of these hearings and this testimony. And then they've promised some sort of public accountability, and then it's got to go to the Senate. And then we bump into, you know, full on primary time. And it's just it's going to be interesting to see if they can anyway keep to that timeline, because if it pushes into the spring and Democratic politics on a national scale take over in terms of the election, you know, the will to do this might not be there as much.
That's right. And as far as the trade agreement getting done in the meantime, I think this would do a lot to make business executives more comfortable pulling the trigger on investments. I think if the president, who knows whether he's going to get a deal with China or not, but I think anything he can do to show that trade and investment are going to be welcomed, maybe striking another deal like he did with Japan, maybe announcing unilaterally lower tariffs with some part of the world, I think that could be very positive to get that that business investment back to where we'd like to see it, regardless of how this impeachment drama proceeds and how long it takes, and whether it's whether it leads anywhere.
The good news here too is that if you just look at the numbers, is that despite all the talk about the trade fights and everything, it didn't seem to have an impact on trade, and that the numbers, the GDP numbers show the exports were up a little bit, imports mm-hmm. were up a little bit in general. So that was largely a neutral factor, as it were, in this GDP number. But yes, it would certainly help on the business investment side if there was some greater certainty out there.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk about all the uncertainty around impeachment. Stay with us.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back to Potomac Watch. James Freeman here, along with Resistance at All Costs best-selling author Kimberly Strassel. Kim, very exciting. The book is out this week. And Resistance at All Costs, it does seem to be what we're seeing at the moment. We've watched this I guess we'll call it an impeachment inquiry happening behind closed doors. Lots of questions about the process and handling of witnesses, and are witnesses being coached, and why can't we see everything that they're saying? And now, Kim, we have been told by the Speaker of the House that we will have a vote this week to open up this process, or at least try to legitimize it. What should we expect in this vote, and what is the meaning of it?
Well, I'm not quite sure this is a legitimization exercise in the end, now that we've actually seen the text of the resolution. Remember, the big complaint here was that this entire proceeding was unrolling in a way that was not like any impeachment proceeding we've had in the past, mm-hmm. for all the reasons you mentioned. It's being done in secret. It's being done by committees other than the Judiciary Committee. The White House has been exiled from the process. It's not allowed to have its general counsel in the hearings. The Republicans have not been allowed to call any witnesses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this resolution was supposed to fix all that. And instead, we get a resolution where it's formalizing the process, but mostly it's formalizing the stacked deck that already has existed. You know, if you look at the text of the resolution, Republicans now have the right to request witnesses, but they have to provide a detailed explanation of why it would even be relevant. And the heads of the committee still can tell them no. And there's not really much of a recourse. They can hold a full committee vote, but Democrats will just outvote Republicans, and so that's that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the White House, it now supposedly has a little role in this process, but they don't get to take part until everything's already been done in the initial three committees and things have been transferred to the Judiciary Committee. So after everything's been completed, and while they can request certain evidence or testimony, again, Jerry Nadler, who runs the Judiciary Committee, has the right to say no or to impose appropriate remedies on the White House if it feels that the White House isn't cooperating enough. So one side here still has all the sticks and hammers. And I'm not sure this goes any way toward reassuring the public that this is a fair process.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but this idea that Republicans can only request witnesses of the Democrats, I think that may formally, perhaps it's normally true whenever a majority is dealing with a minority in the House, but I think certainly the custom in committee hearings is that the majority party will get to pick most of the witnesses, but the minority gets the say on some of those witnesses too, whether or not the majority likes those witnesses.
Well, things have always been different in impeachment proceedings as well, too, right? Because this is not the regular business of the House.
Right.
That in essence, what has happened before is this is an investigatory phase in which you're, you know, trying to decide whether or not you have the evidence to draw up articles of impeachment. And a basic aspect of that process has always been allowing the side of the accused to bring up, you know, their own witnesses that might provide countervailing evidence or shoot down the arguments on one side. The goal here is supposed to be fact finding.
Right.
You know, and so it's not meant to be partisan in that regard. And this is instead being set up entirely as the majority having the ability to just railroad the other side out of being able to present anything. And again, that goes nowhere toward reassuring the public that this is a process that's about facts rather than a process that's about just, you know, taking out the president.
And the speaking of the process and witnesses, one thing I have never seen, this is certainly not a normal practice in Congress, whatever the inquiry is or the issue on the table, Republicans saying that the Democratic House Intel Chair Adam Schiff prevented them from questioning a witness this week or prevented certain questions they were posing to the witness. So this is certainly not normal in Congress.
No. Well, I think the specific allegation was that when they asked certain questions, Adam Schiff directed the witness not to answer them. And it's important because it goes to the question of, of who these people were also talking to. You know, Republicans want to get the full story on how all of this rolled out. And they were, my understanding is saying, you know, who told you this, or who did you talk to that left you with this impression? And Adam Schiff intervened and said the witness will not answer that question.
Now, the new, I guess, set of procedures, new formal package that will now be voted on. I'm wondering what we should expect here and how we should read this vote. I would assume that many House Democrats who are going to have to run next year in swing districts or in districts that voted for Trump in 2016, I believe there are a few, would not necessarily enjoy taking this vote. Do you expect ultimately they all get on board because Speaker Pelosi has announced it? Do you expect some people to vote no, some voting present? How should we look at these results and interpret them?
Well, as we talked about yesterday on the podcast, I think, you know, the New York Times has been keeping a list, and I believe at last count there were still 8 House Democrats who had not formally endorsed going ahead with an impeachment inquiry. And I would wager that by the end of tonight, a lot of them are going to have very sore arms, because the arm twisting for them to get on board is going to be intense. Mm-hmm. Mostly for this reason, because it's going to be an enormous embarrassment for Nancy Pelosi if she holds a vote and doesn't even have the entirety of her caucus on board. Meaning, think about what that says in terms of how far we've come from just a few months ago, when both Nancy Pelosi and Jerry Nadler, the head of the Judiciary Committee, said that if you were going to move forward with impeachment, it needed to be on a bipartisan basis.
Yeah.
So if you instead have a vote and you can't even convince your entirety of your own party that this is a worthwhile exercise, that just highlights and underlines the degree to which this is a partisan exercise. I can't really see Republicans getting on board, not only because, I mean, look, the Democrats have given them so many reasons not to at this point as well, too, given the way this process has unfolded. And mm-hmm. now with a resolution that denies them basic, you know, rights. So, I mean, they all, even the ones that themselves, Republicans who are in, you know, dicier districts and might be feeling some pressure over this impeachment inquiry, they're on solid grounds to come out and say, look, I can't vote for a resolution that doesn't even allow us a fair process, quite aside from the merits.
Yeah. And you mentioned the possibility that the speaker loses some Democratic votes. I think it would be especially significant because this is not a vote to impeach. This is a vote to continue the inquiry. So if you formalize it, proceed with it, however you want to put it. So if the speaker is losing Democrats on the question of whether to continue a process of investigating, I think that is a huge setback politically, I would think, unless she unexpectedly picks up a lot of Republican votes.
Yeah, I don't see how that works out well for her. I think in a best case scenario, look, this is the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. She gets the entirety of the Democratic caucus, okay? Mm-hmm. Or maybe loses one or something like that. But even so, what does she get to say? The entire Democratic Party of the House decided to vote to move forward in an impeachment proceeding. She hasn't convinced a single Republican of the necessity of this. And that sends a message out to the country, you know, that this is not the way impeachment has been done in the past, in which there were bipartisan majorities to go forward. And I think, again, it just further highlights that for those out there who are looking at this and wondering if it's a continuation of Democratic attempts over the last 3 years to undermine the Trump presidency, this is going to be further evidence for them.
Yeah, and of course, the evidence of the resistance at all costs leading up to this point is in your book. I mean, as someone who's been observing this, I know there are some Democratic House members who have been urging impeachment of the president since before he was inaugurated. Do you look at this as a continuation of this resistance, or is there something new in this impeachment and this Ukraine story.
No, I mean, it's absolutely, it's a continuation. And it's really disturbing because one of the points I try to make in the book is, despite this claim that we've had for 3 years that Donald Trump is undermining democracy, destroying our institutions, if you step back and look, it's really the other side. I mean, look at the impeachment thing right now. We are moving toward, as we just talked about in terms of this vote, a process in which we are using impeachment as a partisan political tool, a way to, you know, overturn the results of a prior election, where we're settling political debates with impeachment. And, you know, I keep that's a brand new use of one of the more serious tools supplied in the Constitution, and dangerous for the future because, as I keep mentioning to our friends on the other side of the you know, political aisle, do you really want to set this precedent? Do you really want to be in a position where the next time there's a Democratic president and a Republican House, one of the first things we do is move to impeach?
Yeah, and I think it's been striking. We've been talking about how the process is flawed, but so much of the leaks we've gotten and the reports from Mr. Schiff and others conducting this impeachment inquiry relate to staff in the government who disagreed with policy decisions or who disagreed with Trump decisions or preferences on personnel. A lot of the reporting the last several weeks, it's been about how he was forcing out this ambassador or this staffer didn't agree at all with the way he was handling this, which again, would suggest to your point that this is, in many cases, we're talking about policy differences, not the high crimes and misdemeanors contemplated by the Constitution.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I sort of laughed almost a little bit all of these breathless headlines yesterday about the fact that, you know, the House Democrats were finally going to interview someone who had been on the call, the infamous call between Donald Trump right. and the Ukrainian President Zelensky, when all I could do was sort of laugh because guess what? Like, why do we need someone else who is on the call and offers their appraisal of what happened on the call when we've all read the call?
Right.
And in fact, have heard from the two people who were actually having the discussion on the call, Donald Trump and, you know, Zelensky of Ukraine, and that Ukrainians have said they felt no pressure. And in fact, they did not even know that the aid was being withheld. So none of these witnesses that are being brought and then these snippets of angry testimony that are being leaked are adding anything to the basic facts that still exist, which is that Democrats had accused Donald Trump of a quid pro quo when, in fact, we know that the aid went to Ukraine and that it happened despite there not being any investigation into Joe Biden.
Yeah, I would think as long as the alleged victim, Mr. Zelensky, says he was not victimized, I would think this would not necessarily go very far, but it is worth rereading that transcript because it's frequently referred to and often I think miscast or misinterpreted. So we do recommend that, and of course, reading Resistance at All Costs this week finally available. So hope everyone will read that as well. Thanks, Kim. This was a pleasure filling in.
Thanks, James. It was a great podcast.
Okay, sounds good. And thanks to all our listeners. Paul Gigot will be back on Friday for the next Potomac Watch podcast.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.